So I think what's maybe the most important thing for any leadership position is having that maturity, that EQ, emotional proficient, to know what your weaknesses are. If you know what your weaknesses are, then you can actually address them. You can either try and grow as a person and get better at your weaknesses, or you can just find someone to help you to offset your weaknesses.
Welcome to another episode of the Lead UP podcast. I am Lennox Wasara, an award-winning radio host and alumnus of the University of Pretoria. As you know, on this podcast, I speak to a number of alumni who are friends of the University of Pretoria as they share their lessons and their journey in leadership. So join me as we get to find out how their lives have turned out. Most of us love Hollywood movies and enjoy binging our favorite shows in our spare time, sometimes doing this even at home. You might be familiar with shows and movies like Stranger Things, Grey's Anatomy, Gangster Squad, and SEAL Team, and many, many more. Regardless, each production requires the right technology to create quality visuals that you and I can enjoy at home or in the cinema. Our very own alumnus, Nicole Fahim, the CEO of Creative Solutions and founder of TerraDeck, joins us today. His technology and equipment innovations have been spotted in some of the creation of the biggest Hollywood shows and movies. In 2021, he won an Oscar at the Scientific and Technical Awards. Above all, he holds a Bachelor in Electronic Engineering from the University of Pretoria. Let's find out what life is like for a Hollywood star. Thanks, Nicole. It's so great to be chatting with you today. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate being here.
Starting off on a congratulatory note, you have done so well for yourself, and many people love winning. I even remember back, there was a time when the Minister of Sport in South Africa referred to the national football team, Bafana Bafana, as a bunch of winners. And you actually won recently in February 2021. You won the Technical Achievement Award and also a Technical Oscar Award, in other words. So what did this mean to you?
So I think technically, let's go through all the different names. It's an Academy Award. It's awarded by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. And it's an Academy Award for scientific and engineering achievement. And what this really means is it's a technical Oscar. It's awarded to people that through their work made a substantial contribution to the art and science of filmmaking. So we won the award. There was a number of us in my company. We actually won two awards that was assigned to seven people for the specific impact that they had over the years in transforming the industry and the art of filmmaking. Very specifically, we created a very successful product called the TerraDeck Bolt, like lightning bolt, which is a wireless video transmitter. And that really transformed the way that they make films or television or lots of other productions these days. And they deemed it noteworthy to give us an award to say that we really did change the industry.
Wow, that is indeed amazing. I must say, it's not all the time that a South African engineer wins a technical Oscar award, which is truly a rare achievement in many ways. When you reflect on this, did you ever think you would ever be where you are today?
There's no way on earth that 20 years ago when I moved to California or 30 years ago when I studied engineering that I anticipated this. Okay, but more recently, you are notified when you get nominated and then you have to present in front of the Academy Committee. So I was very hopeful that I was going to get it, and I made a little movie that explained, you know, the whole history of the product development that I took all the way back to what I learned in engineering school and the fundamentals of electronic engineering and information theory that goes back many, many decades. It's not as if we just did it in the last 5 years. We stood on the shoulders of giants. So in the last few months before we were actually awarded, I was very aware of it and hoping for it, but I still didn't think I'm going to win anything.
I like the fact that you mention the people who have been able to create and contribute to the industry way before your time, as you refer to them as yourself standing on shoulders of giants. Now, when you think back, how did you actually get into the filmmaking industry? What drove you into the space?
So I studied electronic engineering. I had an emphasis on software, and specifically that software always kind of from the get-go was applied to signal processing. So that could be image recognition, which now it could be image recognition from infrared camera or a radar missile or, you know, a camera outside a shop trying to prevent theft. It was always kind of in that field of signal processing. But I didn't really enjoy that until I started applying that to this area of filmmaking, because that actually did combine two fields of interest for me. So on one hand, I'm the nerd, I'm the engineer, I like the signal processing. On the other hand, I've always been a big photography buff. So from a very young age, I was always taking a lot of nature pictures, loved traveling specifically to take pictures. I had a massive, large format film camera with, you know, the type that you throw the cloth over your head like Ansel Adams, with these massive plates that's still film-based, not digital. That was my hobby. So I really enjoyed the visual arts and the creativity that goes with that. And photography is a very cool hobby because it combines the science and the art in one.
That is so fascinating, because I meet a lot of people who talk about their struggle to integrate their passion and also their skill sets. So how were you able to do all of this?
I have to be clear, it wasn't really by design. It was by coincidence. And I think this happens quite often, right? But this in itself is a very worthwhile, you know, we can spend the rest of the day just philosophizing about this. There's a Japanese philosophy that I learned only much later called Ikigai. And this is basically how to have a meaningful life. And it basically says, look, you're going to spend a lot of hours of your life at work. So your work has to be meaningful and you have to be successful at work. Otherwise, you will be unhappy as a human. It's not only about work, but work is an important part. And so what does that look like? When are you meaningful in a career? And it basically has four elements to it. So it's like, looks like a flower with four leaves, and where they intersect, that's Ikigai. And so the first one is, it's got to be something that you're good at. The second one is, it's got to be something that you enjoy. The third one is, it's got to be something that you can get paid for that is valuable. And the last one is, it's got to be something that has impact, that is meaningful to the society. And so if you have all four of that, that's Ikigai. Then you really have a meaningful, impactful work that will actually make you happy and make you feel good about yourself and maybe even, you know, whatever, make you popular or famous, whatever you're looking for. But you have to find that balance. And so in this case, it was complete coincidence. We were literally building product for security purposes. But we ended up going to a show to meet with the FBI to show them our product. But just because there's no show for the FBI, they go to these broadcast shows. And this is where a lot of the camera makers and the new technology and video editing and monitors and screens and tripods, all this stuff, go to these broadcasts or the filmmaker shows. And the FBI literally walks around there to see what's the newest surveillance technologies. So we had a piece of technology that wasn't even really a product yet. And we went there to try and have a meeting with the FBI to show them this cool piece of technology. But then when we saw what was actually on the display, the whole broadcast industry, all these massive screens with just fantastic lights and, you know, these cool virtual studios with a green screen in the background, but then you can actually see the live image edit and all the special effects from movies and just screens everywhere and cameras. And we looked at it and we thought, man, this is so much more exciting than surveillance. And actually, our technology is even more applicable to this industry than it is to surveillance. So we pivoted, and instead of trying to make surveillance products, we started making broadcast products.
I find that to be so interesting from an entrepreneurial perspective, when you're actually actively doing something and pursuing something, you sometimes do stumble upon an opportunity. And that's sort of like the case for you that led you into the film industry.
It's exactly right. Sometimes that purpose actually comes and finds you. The way I would phrase it is innovation happens when people do something in a new way. That new way might not be clear to you what the application for that is, but then, you know, later on, all of a sudden you see a new use for it. So I'm just making this up as an example now, but I don't think the touchscreen was developed with a cell phone in mind at all. It was probably invented for a fuel pump or something. So someone invented the touchscreen, and when he was thinking of, he was just marching along that path, inventing a touchscreen. Someone else took the touchscreen and applied it to the cell phone, and now everything, everywhere, everyone is using a touchscreen. So sometimes the opportunity finds you. You don't necessarily have to understand every possible use case for the technology that you're developing. You must just do something, and it doesn't have to be technology either, but you must just do something that is unique.
Now, I must be honest with you. I personally do not watch movies a lot. It's kind of a rare thing for me. When it does happen, I do find myself at a cinema, but, you know, barely happens. But I do have an appreciation of the fact that there's a lot of work that goes into movie making. And your technology is literally everywhere in major TV and film productions. But you've also had the opportunity to be behind the scenes with some of these productions, especially The Gangster Squad is one that you've been behind the scenes for. Tell us a bit more about that experience, being behind the scenes.
It's really interesting. I mean, you've probably heard some of the anecdotes. You know, some movies like Avatar or something cost $1 billion. And you wonder, what the heck do they do? How can they possibly spend that much money on making this product? Well, so the one thing to keep in mind is, if you see a movie that's 2 hours long or a TV episode that's 1 hour long, they probably shot 1,000, maybe 2,000 hours. So the reason why I chose this example of Gangster Squad, it was the first time that I was on a movie set while they were shooting for the duration of the scene. And so there's a very specific little scene. It's less than 2 minutes out of the movie. So we showed up in LA on set at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I think we maybe started shooting at 8 o'clock at night. And I think we were finished at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I spent 12 hours being one of 200 people on set, just trying to assist. So all I had to do was to make sure that the wireless video system was working. But there was like 12 hours spent by 200 people on set to try and nail what amounted to less than 2 minutes of the movie. So when you actually see it unfold, when you see the layers and layers and layers of effort and sophistication that goes into it, then you really do realize this is absolutely an art form. And it's simplest, it's just entertainment. It could just be storytelling. But just taking a little handycam and just telling a little story, that's simple. The amount of effort that big production put into making everybody look good, actually coming across as authentic, the amount of effort that goes into transforming a city street, just one street, back to 1949, all the old vehicles had to be there. Everybody had to be in a different wardrobe than what they would be today. All the buildings had to be repainted, the shops had to be renamed with something that was kind of back to that era. And then they have to pay so much attention to getting the lighting just right, and the actors have to hit their lines, and the timing of all of these different extras has to be just so. There's so much more that goes into creating the art. And once you start understanding it, then you can really appreciate it.
Wow, that is very interesting to actually realize that so much more work goes into creating movies. I mean, I saw some of the work that your technology has been involved in is in commercial ads for companies, which have also taken a lot of time to create. But your technology has also made life a lot easier for people on set during COVID-19, which is very important. But at a personal level now, for you as a South African staying abroad in America, how did you handle with the changes that were brought about by COVID-19? How were you doing at the time?
It was pretty scary. You know, I was in a in a position where I manage almost 350 people, and they're all kind of looking at me to make the choice, make the decision, and to advise them what to do. And this was now, you know, March of 2020. The science wasn't there. The understanding of the disease wasn't there. And it was very quickly politicized in America. So there were people saying it's all fake, and there's still people saying it's fake. And there were people saying the masks are not going to do anything, and we should just ignore it and let it do its thing. So, you know, it was a very stressful situation to be in that position of responsibility to try and make the right choice. That can now affect the livelihood of everybody that works there, but also their health and safety. So how do you balance the two? Obviously, health and safety has to rule, right? So I think it was, if I remember right, it was March 18th. I gave the order that everybody must leave the office. The office must be locked. I literally had the building security cancel everybody's access card so that they couldn't come into the office anymore, because I knew some people that's, you know, workaholics would hate not being able to come into the building, and they would come in to use equipment or something like that. So we basically banned people from the building and prevented them from getting back in. So it was very turbulent, very tumultuous. And it, for a few months, it just looked scary as hell. And then it kind of turned around, and we actually noticed some areas of the business is actually thriving. And in some way, you know, some people were actually getting closer together, because all of a sudden we had more in common, and what's top of our mind was now the same for everyone.
While I certainly agree with you, the time we're finding ourselves in, especially due to COVID-19, does come with so much complexity, but also can make leadership even more complex, because now what's at stake is people's lives. So the way we make decisions is very, very important. So I am interested to know how you went about that, and what are some of your leadership philosophies, what are some of your leadership views and insights that you sort of hold on to and also use in your role as CEO?
So we spoke briefly before the call about what is leadership, and there's lots of different definitions. It means different things to different people. What I've found and what I made my own definition is there's two aspects to it. There's the leader that is typically someone that motivates people, inspire them, and it's running kind of right in front. You know, when you're running up that mountain, the leader is in front. And then there's also a manager. And the manager is someone that's more organized and more disciplined and more structured, and has to pay attention to all these details, because it's not only the vision that matters, it's very much the execution. I think it was General MacArthur or somebody that says, if I had to choose between a good strategy and good execution, I'll take execution every day. Because even if you have a great strategy, if you have poor execution, you will fail. So what I found, what came easy to me and what I was maybe more talented in, was the leadership side of it, not the management side of it. I'm not naturally a very organized, very disciplined person, but very structured. I kind of, that actually scares me. I hate structure. But I can excite people. I can motivate people. I can convince people. So it boiled down to, I had to just find a vision and convince people that this vision is worth pursuing. It's worth running up this hill. But then I also had to find other people that can help me, that can offset that weaknesses of mine where I'm maybe not so structured and not so disciplined. So I always surrounded myself with people that are strong in the areas that I'm weak. And when you realize that, so I think what's maybe the most important thing for any leadership position is having that maturity, that EQ, the emotional coefficient, to know what your weaknesses are. If you know what your weaknesses are, then you can actually address them. You can either try and grow as a person and get better at your weaknesses, or you can just find someone to help you. to offset your weaknesses. The danger lies in only focusing on what you're good at and not recognizing what you're weak at. And so that was kind of my style. I quickly learned what I'm good at, where I'm weak at. I found people to help me with the weakness. And then it was just, for me, it was very empowering. It kind of set me free to then be inventive and be ambitious and come up with a vision and then inspire people to follow that vision.
Wow, that is quite interesting. But what allowed you to have the courage to have the honest conversation with yourself about where you really were? Because that self-assessment can be difficult because we might not always have the courage to have one with ourselves. But how did you get the courage to do so? And were you doing this by yourself, or you actually had people around you assisting you with this?
Ironically, I now have someone identifying that and assisting me. This is now the second year that I'm enrolled in a leadership academy with a pretty strong group of people that's absolutely the experts in this field that wrote books and did lots of studies. And I've been participating in that for about a year and a half now. But obviously, you know, I didn't have that 20 years ago when it started. So a lot of what I just said is now in the rearview mirror. It's in hindsight. I can see that that was important, but I didn't necessarily know it at the time. And I think it just boils down to relying on people. And being open and honest and transparent with people. So it almost all boils down to people skills. When you surround yourself with people and you're honest and transparent with them and you get honesty and transparency back, you'll very quickly learn that I can help you with this and you can help me with that, right? And so if I had to say, what is leadership? Okay, you know, we spoke about, is it the inspirational leader or is it the disciplined manager? But it's going to be different for every person. Some people are going to be strong at one thing. Some people are going to be strong at another. Some leaders are born, some leaders are made. Some are, you know, trained through years and formed through lots of experiences. The one thing I think every leader has in common is leadership is a journey. It's something that forms over time. And you can kind of look back and you can see, okay, now I get it. That was actually a pivotal point. This was actually a really important choice this was a forming experience. You don't necessarily realize it in the moment. So it's not as if it's as you've asked, it sounds as if it's by design. It's often not by design. You just stumble through it and you make the right choices. And then on the other side, you realize, okay, you learn something from it.
I'm sure that has led you to so much success, tolerating failure, which a lot of people avoid. My final question to you now is, thinking and reflecting on your journey at the University of Pretoria, what is an element of the institution that you would never forget?
And that was a very good period of my life. I studied engineering. It's a beautiful campus. It was a really good group of professors, strong group of students. I made lots of friends that I'm still friends with. I met my wife and I'm still married to her. So
obviously
that was a very formative part of my career. And, you know, I have to point this out. I have a bachelor's degree in engineering. I never did go back and did a master's or MBA or anything like that. And even the bachelor's, I was not a stellar student. I was a loafer. Partly, you know, this is how I can make this excuse. It's not as if I was partying hard. It was because I was working over weekends and at night to get me through college. So we were very poor. I had one small loan from the bank and the rest of my studies I basically funded through a moonlighting job. Numerous different ones. At one point, I was making sandwiches on weekends just to make money. And this wasn't in a fancy takeout or anything like that. This wasn't someone's house. I was making 300 to 400 sandwiches for them to feed their workforce the next day. I was a movie usher. Maybe the more important one is I was an early programmer. So this was kind of one of my first experiences in leadership. A professor once walked in and told us that a friend of his, an ex-student or ex-colleague, wanted to have a bunch of programmers solve a hard problem for him. I didn't know how to program, but I knew a bunch of programmers. So I got the programmers together and we formed a little team. I learned how to program from my friends and we solved the scientific problem for the CSIR and we made some money in the process. So there was so much opportunity to learn. I think university is a fantastic time of your life and it's a fantastic place. So I hugely encourage anyone that can to go there. And if you can afford to go back and study more, you won't regret it.
And now you're an Oscar winner. So congratulations and thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate your time. I must mention it really felt as though I've known you for a long time just chatting with you today.
Thank you. That's awesome. At the end of the day, leadership is nothing more than just being kind to people. It's just a question of giving back and that's how you build a team. And that's the next thing you know, you're managing a lot of people and you're a success.
And that was Nicole Fahim, who certainly highlighted the importance of understanding our weaknesses because those can easily turn into our strengths. But also he highlighted the fact that we must be able to make a distinction between leadership and management, whilst keeping in mind that leadership is a lifelong journey. Remember to join the UP Alumni Connect platform. Go to www.upalumniconnect.com and click on Get Connected. Or go to the App Store or the Play Store, search Graduate Community. Install the app, select University of Pretoria as your institution of choice, and register or log in. Get connected today. This podcast is produced by the University of Pretoria's Alumni Relations Office. My name is Lennox Wasara. Our production team includes Samantha Castle, Alno Schutz, and our sound engineers are Louis Kluter Productions.